child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter. Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter.
Someday, yeah, we'll put it together and we'll get it undone.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to Naturalistic Support. I'm Arnel Doré.
And I'm Elaine Durbach.
Hey, Elaine.
Hi, Arnel.
Naturalistic Support is a unique approach to lasting personal growth and healthier, more satisfying relationships. On Naturalistic Support, we help each other, combining a progressive understanding of our human experience with peer support. So that involves you calling us to talk about yourselves as well as to talk to each other. Our number is 212-209-2877. And today, we'll continue our consideration of seniors, what we can learn from them, what we can't, and how we can connect in ways that are rewarding and enjoyable. Last week, we discussed how by 2029, the entire baby boomer generation born between 1946 and 1964 will have officially crossed into seniorhood. The first time in U.S. history when the population of older adults is projected to surpass the number of children under age 18. Now, one point of clarification from last week, we had a caller who mentioned that senior citizens in China enjoy the designation of a living national treasure. That is not correct. In actuality, the prestigious designation, a living national treasure, is an informal title given by the Japanese government to Japanese master craftspeople and performing artists. They are officially recognized as preservers of important, intangible cultural properties. These individuals are honored for possessing irreplaceable, highly specialized skills vital to Japan's cultural heritage. And there is no requirement that those individuals are seniors. Last week, we talked about several innovative models for bringing elders together with young people. And these include university-based requirement communities. Remember those, Elaine?
Yeah, great idea. Yeah, really, that's a brilliant concept.
That's where senior housing is built right on college campuses. And these seniors interact with college students. They sit in and monitor classes. It really gives a very lively dynamic to seniors and gives a good element of exposure to elders to the college students.
I'm just curious whether the students are allowed to invite the seniors out boozing with them. You know, see who can consume the most beers and still walk straight.
Well, what strikes me is the seniors might be useful for buying a keg when the when the underage students cannot.
That's surely something they should be asked to do.
Yeah, without a doubt. That should be like compulsory.
And then there was the idea of having the seniors preschools set up inside senior centers. Also, a lovely idea, having the little ones running around and interacting with grandparents.
Absolutely. And where that takes place, it seems like everybody loves it, which is fantastic. Then there's the Village Movement, which is a mutual aid circle where both young and older neighbors help each other.
Yeah. good one, just the younger people mowing lawns and older people providing guidance and
mentoring
help
and
cooking for each other. I like the digital intergenerational buddy system.
Yeah, so I think that the way that works is young people give seniors technical support, and then once the seniors are sufficiently technically adept, they have Zoom calls where they watch media content together, or they have discussions, and they connect digitally.
I'm actually taking part in something like that tomorrow night.
Oh, great.
They're having a circle of people, I think, over 65, answering questions put to us by younger people.
That's great.
I believe it's something like that.
Do you know anybody over 65?
No, not a soul.
No, neither do
I. Which reminds me, happy birthday, Arnell.
Yes, I just had a birthday. I swapped out decades. It's so far, it's been very, very good to me.
You sound kind of happier about it this week than last week when it was looming.
Yeah. It's always good looking at it from the rearview mirror.
Yeah, you cross the line and, hey, nothing's fallen off.
Yeah. Had a nice time with my younger daughter that day. It was good.
That's lovely.
And, there are also programs which match high school or college students one-on-one with seniors based on shared interests. It might not seem like a senior and a college student could have shared interests, but apparently they can.
That'd be another fun one to take part in.
Yep.
And then placing younger adults directly into existing senior care facilities as regular roommates. That's a challenging one.
That sounds tricky to me, too. But my assumption is that they're not going to put them into, where there's a patient who's on life support.
Yeah. And I don't think it's the same room. I think it's rooms in the same facility.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right about that. Mm. But another innovative solution. Also, pairing city-dwelling seniors who have extra space in their homes, as a lot of people do when, empty nesters and such, with graduate students or young professionals who need affordable housing.
And then that idea of rent-a-grandparent?
Yes, a Japanese phenomenon. You can actually rent all kinds of family members, but since we're talking about seniors, it's the rent-a-grandparent aspect that we're focused on.
And there was that funny detail that they pay more for the grandmothers than the grandfathers.
Yeah, sometimes we men are made to feel useless.
I think they were assuming that the grandmothers would do more work.
Yeah.
More cooking and more diaper changing or whatever.
I mean, sometimes we are useless, but I'll admit it. Yeah. It seems like maybe it'll be different as the younger people become seniors. We'll see.
Yeah, absolutely. And guys like you who are excellent cooks.
Yeah, I can cook. And we even talked about a town in Japan where images of the older people were put on trading cards that the kids in the town were all excited over.
Yeah, that was wonderful. And they were not necessarily like national treasure kind of people. They were normal people. They were ordinary citizens.
Yeah, like they had a sushi chef. They had a fireman.
Yeah.
They had an electrician. It's great stuff. But with all these efforts to bring young people together with seniors, we said last week it's important to consider, what can we really hope to learn from seniors? In our current continually shifting culture, do elderly people truly have valuable knowledge to pass on to the young? It's a common assumption, but could it be wrong?
Yeah, the world that a teen or a 20-something faces today is so radically different than the one their parents grew up in, let alone what their grandparents grew up in.
Mm. Last week, we read an article that romanticized seniors as founts of profound wisdom and keepers of valuable cultural traditions, and that, quote, elderly individuals can provide invaluable guidance on ethical dilemmas, moral values, and the importance of integrity. But this seemed to overlook that many seniors might not be terribly wise. Their moral sense may be antiquated, and the cultural values they uphold may be laced with narrow-minded bigotry.
Yeah, I mean, while there are areas where life experience does result in some valuable wisdom, at the same time, many older people have beliefs that are unquestionably not worth passing on, including beliefs that are sexist or racist or tribal, generally parochial or insular, misanthropic ideas about human nature and religiosity.
And these include social prejudices, deep-seated biases regarding race, gender roles, sexual orientation, and cultural identity, risk aversion, where they're hypersensitive to economic or social changes, leading to advice rooted in fear rather than opportunity, survival mode mindsets, misanthropic or tribal us versus them mentalities forged during different historical pressures or times of scarcity, and rigid dogmatism, inflexible religious or philosophical views that leave little room for personal autonomy or scientific reality.
Yeah, I think most older adults also believe that people have contra-causal free will, that human nature is inclined towards selfishness, and that people won't contribute unless coerced into doing so. These fundamental traditional beliefs are almost universally subscribed to by older adults, but they're flatly contradicted by modern empirical science.
So, that about catches us up with last week, and having done so, let's try to understand, why do older adults cling to these outdated views? Understanding why such toxic or inaccurate frameworks are so popular among older generations requires looking at the historical and psychological context of their lives.
Older generations grew up in eras heavily influenced by traditional religious doctrines, many of which require absolute free will to justify sin and divine punishment. The concept that the brain is a complex, decentralized biological computer wasn't part of their cultural education.
And then there was scarcity and other crises in the 20th century. Many adults lived through or were raised by people who survived intense systematic volatility, such as global wars. I think there were two of them. Yeah. And economic depressions or rigid corporate hierarchies, like man in the gray flannel suit, anyone?
Yeah, and yeah. People who worked for the same company their entire career.
Yeah. These harsh environments rewarded zero-sum thinking, leading to a cynical us-versus-them worldview and the belief that people must be tightly managed to perform.
The comfort of moral accountability. I mean, the contra-causal free will offers a simple moral framework. It allows people to easily assign blame, feel superior for their successes, and justify harsh punishment for those who fail. Accepting a causal worldview requires deep nuance, empathy, and systemic thinking, which can be deeply uncomfortable for someone who spent a lifetime relying on those simple moral binaries.
And the ultimate danger of these beliefs is that when older generations aggressively push them, it creates a toxic cycle. Believing that humans are inherently selfish and require coercion leads to the creation of punitive, low-trust social institutions. Furthermore, Believing in contra-causal free will causes people to ignore the systemic material causes of societal issues like poverty, addiction, and mental illness, choosing instead to blame individual moral failure.
Of course, I mean, some of these things we see very much in the younger generation, but yep. Hopefully things are changing. And yep. For younger generations, the task is to recognize that an elder's life experience doesn't bestow on them scientific authority. It's entirely possible to respect an older person's resilience or their historical memory while completely rejecting their flawed, anachronistic philosophy of mind and human behavior.
So, looking to elders for wisdom without considerable discernment and skepticism is unwise. But given these limitations, how can a young person's relationship with an elder be pleasurable and rewarding?
When we remove the expectation that older adults must be flawless sources of ultimate truth or moral guidance, it actually frees the relationship from immense pressure.
Yeah. The most effective relationship between generations is reciprocal, not one way.
Yeah.
Youth provide older adults with technical literacy and fresh cultural insights. And in return, older adults can provide youth with structural stability, historical context, and mentorship. This exchange bridges the gap created by rapid technological growth.
Yeah, a young person's relationship with an elder becomes highly pleasurable and rewarding when it shifts from a hierarchical relationship, teacher-student mode, to a peer-like relationship of mutual curiosity and shared humanity. Let's consider some strategies for successful relationships between the elderly and the young.
So one would be to shift from seeking wisdom from them to seeking information. So the strategy is stop asking them what you should do in your life. Instead, ask them what it was like in theirs. And that works because treating an elder as a historical archive rather than a moral oracle eliminates friction. Asking about specific historical events that they lived through, or how a city looked when they were young, or what daily life was like in a different decade, provides highly dense, fascinating anthropological data without triggering outdated ideological debates.
Yeah, I'd love that idea. If you practice historical empathy without necessarily having agreement, that can work too. So the strategy is approach their worldview the same way an anthropologist approaches an ancient text. And it works because when an elder expresses an anachronistic belief, say like the cynical view of human nature or rigid gender roles, you don't need to correct them or adopt it. Instead, observe it with intellectual curiosity. You ask yourself, what specific historical and material conditions in the 20th century forced this person to develop this specific attitude? And this keeps you intellectually safe while making the conversation a rewarding psychological exercise.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting, it reminds me of this field of study, I think it's called hermeneutics, where you understand history, you try to understand history from the vantage point of the people that you're studying. And you try to take things in that context, and that gives you more insight than, because we tend to judge things with our current morality and our current understanding. And sometimes, I think maybe even particularly with young people, it can overwhelm you know, like, okay, so George Washington was a slaveholder, and for some people, that overwhelms, that's the headline about George Washington. You don't need to know anything else. Whatever you know compared to that pales. And in, you know, from our current vantage point, there's truth to that. But there's also truth that to see somebody in the context of what they were living through and understand them in that context gives you other insights that are also valuable.
Yeah, and it separates what they're saying, what their viewpoint is, from our own.
Yep.
We who've had a different experience. It doesn't just invalidate it.
Yep. Another strategy involves focusing on tactile, non-ideological shared activities. So you're building the relationship around shared presence, physical tasks, or sensory experiences rather than abstract intellectual debates. So it works because human connection thrives in shared action. So if you were cooking together, that would be an example of this kind of activity, or listening to music, perhaps music from their youth, playing a strategy game, like a card game or a board game, or working on a physical project, like building a model together. Anything like that bypasses the cognitive frameworks where toxic dogmas usually live. It anchors the relationship in the present moment, and it shares emotional warmth.
I can see that working really beautifully. I could also see it hitting some roadblocks.
Yeah.
You know, I remember my husband trying to repair the car with my son and saying, that's not how you do it. And my son saying, Dad, there's new equipment.
Yeah.
This is how I do it.
Right. Yeah, no, I could, you know, I think all of these suggestions are contingent on a certain amount of flexibility for the people involved.
Yes.
Because really, if you get like a young person that goes into an anxiety panic over like the wrong word that's mentioned, they might not be ideal candidates for some of these recommendations. Or if you get an old person that's, you know, Mr. Grumpy, that can also be, a dead end.
I think one has to bring in some, or bar some expressions like, this is how we've always done it.
Yeah.
Not acceptable.
Yeah, or, I don't know how they deal with ground rule, how well seniors deal with those ground rules.
Yeah.
What was the other one? This is how we always do it, and you had another one.
We've got a new way of doing it.
Right.
Yeah.
That would be the young person.
Both of those are dangerous.
Yeah.
But I think if you get both parties, it's like a marriage counseling. If both parties actually want this to work, they're going to lean into that. How can we do this together? How can we learn from each other?
Exactly. I mean, I think you could get tripped up over anything, whether you're just talking about history, morals, cooking together. I mean, I think it all requires, like any other relationship, it requires, you have to be pretty flexible and graceful and as humble as you can be.
Exactly. Good goals in any situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you talk about engaging in reciprocal modern eldership. There's another approach, isn't it? To treat a relationship as a true two-way street where you teach each other, kind of what we're saying.
Yeah.
And it works because a modern elder is someone who combines experience with curiosity to learn from youth. You can find deep reward in patiently introducing them to new ideas, technologies, or cultural concepts. And when an older person is genuinely curious about your world, explaining modern social science or digital tools or evolving global perspectives. It would be deeply fulfilling.
Yeah, that certainly makes sense. Again, it takes, people who are willing to dance the dance, but if they are, it could be wonderful. Also, enjoying the comfort of a low-stakes horizon. One thing that older adults offer is that they're kind of free from the immediate daily anxieties of youth. And young people are often trapped in intense, high-stake anxieties of building a career or finding a partner or establishing their identity. But because older adults are outside of that competitive arena, spending time with them can offer a psychological rest stop. Their slower pace and detachment from modern digital urgency can act as a calming, grounding presence, even if you don't agree with their specific philosophies.
Yeah. It's just making me think of an exchange at a restaurant recently. The young waiter is very androgynous, very good looking, and very much on the cusp between male and female. There's a guy, uses male pronouns, but he came to work with heavy eyeliner. And I commented, I said, I haven't seen you with eyeliner that way before. No judgment, it's just a different look. And he was very taken aback that there was no judgment in it. And he relaxed and he said, actually, I woke up late and I didn't have time to take off what I wore last night. And I don't like the look, it's not how I want to do it. And we had this discussion about eyeliner and removing it and applying it. And I could see him unfurling. He kind of relaxed and opened up because this old person hadn't been there at all. Although, I've got to say, in my day, there weren't too many men wearing eyeliner.
Yep. Well, David Bowie. You were a little bit, the connection was wavering a little bit. I don't know if you still hear me. But we are taking calls. Give us a call. Tell us what you think about these strategies for connecting to an older person, connecting younger people to older people. Our number is 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. And we would like to hear what your experience is. Do you have a relationship with a younger person if you're a senior? And what's that like? And has that ever been problematic? And how have you dealt with it? Or if you're a younger person who is dealing with older parents or other seniors, or just connected to seniors in your neighborhood, give us a call and tell us about it. Again, 212-209-2877. And while we wait for your calls, we will take our break.
You're listening to Naturalistic Support right here on 99.5 FM WBAI New York.
Non-commercial, listener-sponsored.
Peace and Justice Radio.
On Wednesdays from 2 to 3, Naturalistic Support.